The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
All right, Craig, thank you. It's Tuesday, March 12th, 2024. Now, we don't need any music for this. I've been looking forward to this conversation for the last few days. We have only met Irv Heppner for the first time a few weeks ago. Smart guy, sharp guy. He came on to promote an event, and I invited him to come back because I wanted to continue the conversation. And I asked him, well, what do you want to talk about? What's on your mind? What's in your heart? And Irv said that he wanted to talk about his parents because it turns out, as we're about to find out, that they're Holocaust survivors. And when you have parents that go through that experience, of course, that's going to shape their children. So why am I talking when Irv is here? Irv, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much for having me, Dave. It's good to be here.
I think in the 32 years I've done the show, this is the first time I've addressed this topic. We certainly have talked about the Holocaust. We certainly have talked about people of the Jewish faith. But I don't think we've ever explored it from the prospect of parents and their children. So that's a long way of asking you, let's talk a bit about your parents and hear their story. What should we know about them?
I'll try not to let this take up the entire hour that we have scheduled, Dave.
I'll jump in if necessary.
There's a lot. Cut me off if, yeah. if I'm going too far. My parents lived in Poland at the beginning of World War II, and they didn't know each other. They were 10 years apart in age. My father from the town that Americans would pronounce as Lodz. And my mother lived in Warsaw. My mother was 9 years old when the war started. My dad was 19. And the war, as it did for so many people, completely turned their lives upside down. And of course, they were lucky to survive it. And I mean, the ordinary story of a Jew in Poland was, in fact, to die at the hands of the Nazis.
Right.
That was the typical story. My parents were both lucky in different ways. My father and his older sister saw immediately after the Germans arrived in their town that they were walling off the Jewish area of the city, and they thought, this is not good. We need to get out of here. And they tried to persuade their parents to come with them and bring the siblings. And the parents said, and I understand this is not an uncommon story, they said, we lived through World War I. The Germans were bad, but we survived it. We can survive this. We don't want to leave home. And they had a thriving business. They were very well off economically for those times. And but my father and his sister weren't having any of that, and they said, we're leaving. And they packed, and they left the night that the ghetto was sealed off. And a good thing, because unlike other ghettos, and particularly the Warsaw ghetto, that one could escape from, because it was much larger, had a sewer system, had roofs that you could climb over, you couldn't do that in Lodz. And I don't think, I'm not aware of any recorded cases of Jews having escaped the Lodz ghetto. And indeed, my father's whole family was exterminated by the Nazis. Hmm. But my father and his sister, Chava, managed to get out of Poland in the only way that was safe, which was they went east, and they smuggled themselves across the then Soviet border.
So they were going to Russia.
Huh. You know, if they had made any other decision, they probably wouldn't have survived. So they smuggled themselves in, as many other Poles did, and managed through very difficult circumstances to survive in Russia. They were arrested at some point for crossing the border illegally, and they were sent to a prison camp in Siberia, where they were for about 2 years, until the prison camps were full of Polish refugees and other prisoners, and the Russians decided to let people out, and mostly to starve on the streets. And in any event, let me switch to my mom's story for a minute.
Talk about your mom.
Yeah. So my mom was 9 when the war started. And the Germans invaded Poland quite suddenly. I mean, they were in Warsaw within a very short period of time after starting to bomb the Polish military. And the Polish military was completely unprepared. So my mother and her family were stuck in the Warsaw ghetto. The Germans created a ghetto there, walled it off, and my mother's family stayed in the ghetto for a while until they decided to escape, and they managed to escape. I believe there were 11 of them. My mom, her parents, other relatives, all just got out together. And also managed by hiding in forests and, through some great difficulties, also managed to smuggle themselves across the Soviet border. And they were jailed from time to time. No, I don't believe any of them were sent to Siberia, but they starved on the streets for years. My mother got very lucky. She was able to be placed in an orphanage that was run by the British, where she managed to get some education. But the primary reason for putting her there was there was food there.
Of the 11, how many survived?
10. And one, it was the oldest one who died. She was old, she was ill, and so she was the least capable of tolerating the conditions, which were pretty awful. And actually, from that part of the experience, the lesson that I learned, because these were stories that were told, I know these stories because they were told often in my house. A lot of survivors had experiences that were as bad or worse as my parents, and they didn't want to talk about them. People react to trauma very differently.
Sure.
I don't think my dad was eager to talk about it, but my mother was, and she encouraged my dad to talk about it.
How did your mom meet your dad?
So when my mother was repatriated to Poland from the Soviet Union after the end of the war, and she and her mother found the first opportunity to escape from Poland, which was then occupied by Russians, and she wound up in a displaced persons camp in Germany. And my father was in. You have to understand what the Soviets did with Polish prisoners. There were a lot of them, and they at a certain point, I believe it was toward the end of 1943, beginning of 1944, they rounded up the Poles of military age and put them in the Russian army. They put them in Polish units that were sent to the front and where the casualties were incredibly high. Hmm. Anyway, my dad managed to survive that, and at his first opportunity, he escaped when the British and the Americans had established their zones in Berlin. My dad was in one of the first Russian units to hit Berlin, and as soon as he could, he took off his uniform and he ran. Anyway, he was put in a displaced persons camp as well, being a stateless homeless person, and that's where my parents met.
All right, let's take a short break. We will come back and let Irv Heppner pick up the story and talk more about what it has been like hearing the stories of his parents from World War II. I'm Dave Congleton. We're live, we're local, we're hometown. I sure hope you'll stay with us. So we're in studio with Irv Heppner. Well, you've heard the story about his mom and dad. This is just a taste of it. But can you imagine your parents going through similar circumstances and trying to survive, imagining yourself in that kind of situation? So anyway, as we're back with you, Irv, you were born in Tel Aviv.
Yes.
All right. And oldest of two sons?
Correct.
All right. So how did you find out about your parents?
I found out because my parents, and particularly my mother, had no inhibition about talking about her experiences. You know, perhaps she was, you know, I don't know. As a matter of character, it wasn't like her to hold anything back.
But like, what age are you?
As early as I can remember.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they didn't wait for me to be 13 or 15 or anything
hitting
like that.
They're hitting it with you at an early age.
Oh, yeah. Okay. First of all, we were refugees together after the war. My parents met in the DP camps. They went to Israel shortly after the founding of the state. I was born in Israel. Life was still really, really difficult for them. They lived on rations in Israel. They moved back to Germany because they wanted to come to the United States. They wanted to have a life that had less hunger and less hardship. My mom talked about scrounging for food for me when I was 2, 3, 4 years old. And then even in Germany, life was not so easy. And they very much hoped to come to the States. And eventually they did. So those stories were embedded in our then current life.
And why are they telling you the stories?
For a variety of reasons. One, I think my mother couldn't help herself. And my mother was a very anxious person who was really traumatized by the war, and she couldn't really stop talking about it. I mean, people react differently to trauma. My father, I think, would have been much more quiet about it, except my mother, I think, pushed him to talk about his stories. And So from the time I can remember, I heard, and particularly where food was involved, right? My mother would talk about herself not having enough to eat. And this played out in, you know, you should eat everything that's in front of you,
yeah.
Right? And she had very good reasons for saying, because she was never sure where that next meal was going to come from.
Could you tell from their personality, from their behavior, that they had gone through something traumatic? Would we know?
Oh yeah. Well, let's see. First of all, when I was when we first came to the United States, we lived in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's where I grew up. My parents slept with packed suitcases under their beds. As far as they were concerned, one never knew when the Nazis were going to show up at the door. My father, every night of his life when I was a small child, I think this continued through much of my high school years, he woke up having nightmares every night. My parents spent their last years living with me and my wife in California. We built an addition onto our house, and they lived with us. And my father had nightmares then. And his nightmares were all about being chased by Nazis who wanted to kill him. So that experience never left them. To some extent, it was attenuated. My mother, had a number of experiences in psychiatric hospitals. She suffered from clinical depression, and you know, am I sure that that related to her war experiences? No, I guess I'm not. But that was the working hypothesis.
Well, given what we know about military veterans with PTSD, why would we expect anything different with Holocaust survivors?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, exactly.
The trauma's trauma.
Yep, precisely.
I would be surprised if they didn't. Although I've never, until you came along, Irv, I've never thought this through. That I just thought, well, this person survived. How lucky they are. And indeed. But they had to live with the consequences, the rest, because in most cases, these were young people.
Yeah. And that, and those consequences play out through generations. So, you know, it was not as if, because the fact that I didn't live during the wartime does not mean that I wasn't affected by it. I was deeply affected by it.
Well, I want to hear about that, but first I want to know, basically, how old were you when you were able to comprehend these stories and what they were talking about?
Oh, I'm sure by the time I was 8 or 9.
Really?
I'm certain of that. Yeah, maybe earlier. I mean, it's hard, you know, if you're under the age of 7, I think it's hard to kind of wrap your head around what those stories mean. But I think when I got a little older than that, I certainly understood them.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around what happened in the 1940s, because just of the magnitude of it.
Yeah.
You mentioned numbers and... Oh, okay. But then when you stop and think about what that means, it just, to me, defies comprehension. I just can't believe anything like this happened. And then it's happened again.
And one of the reactions of a child, one of my reactions as a child, was to hold it at arm's length, was to try to say, oh, that has nothing to do with me. And it really... wasn't until I was a young adult, and in psychotherapy, in fact, that I realized it had everything to do with me. There was no way that I could keep those experiences from affecting my life.
Without pushing, is that why you went into therapy? Because of what happened to your parents?
Yes, but I didn't articulate it that way. The way I articulated it was that I felt very sad for reasons that I couldn't put a handle on. I didn't understand why. And it wasn't until I was in therapy that, which didn't last all that long, actually, it lasted about a year and a half, that I figured it out. I stumbled on it. I remember coming in to see the therapist, and he would always ask me about my dreams. And he said, "Do you have any dreams last night?" And I said, "Yeah, I had one. It was truly terrifying. I dreamt that I was walking through a graveyard during the night, and a hand reached up from the earth and grabbed me by the throat."
Oh, dear.
And that was. And it was in understanding that dream, which I did like immediately after I talked about it, that that I said, "Oh, these experiences were really inescapable, weren't they?"
How about for your younger brother?
You know, I haven't talked with him a lot about this particular subject, oddly enough, but. You know, he and I have reacted, I think, this is my hypothesis. Chaim, if you're listening, we'll talk about this. But the way I look at it is that he and I reacted very differently to the same set of facts. For one thing, he was 8.5 years younger, born in this country, didn't really have the same kind of refugee experience as I did. But
hold that thought. Irv Heppner on this broadcast talking about his parents, what they went through during World War II. And how it has affected him. We got news and traffic and weather. More of our conversation still to come. You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show. Happy Tuesday. All right. Sam Cotton is going to join us at 5:05. I'm Dave Congleton. Irv Heppner is on this broadcast. His parents, I mean, there's kind of a theme to the show today. At 3:05, we had Sophia. She and her husband and baby had to flee Afghanistan for their lives. They only had a backpack. And now Irv is here talking about his parents during World War II. They were some of the lucky ones, but then they had to live with the consequences, and Irv grew up in this environment, and we appreciate him being here. So you're born in Tel Aviv. You find out at an early age some of what your parents went through. I want to hear more about your, what I call your journey of discovery. I mean, how important was it to you, and what was the impact for you when you first started hearing this stuff?
The impact wasn't so much when I first started hearing it. The impact really in my life was turned on the dream that I just described, because I had spent my life until then trying to keep my parents' war experiences at arm's length, saying, "Well, that's not me. That doesn't define my life," and in therapy, what I discovered was, no, I have no choice but to deal with this. I've never had any choice but to deal with this. This is my history. This is who my parents were. It was part of the core of their being, or their war experiences, and the terror that they felt, the horror at the loss of so many family members in the concentration camps. I should say the extermination camps. And when I realized in that profound way that this was part of my life, whether I wanted it to be or not, I had to react. And I reacted in a number of ways. One was that I decided that all I could really do was be politically active. So I channeled that energy into what I thought was the most constructive thing that I could do, which was to become politically active, which I've been all of my adult life. And then the other thing that it enabled me to do was to incorporate those parts of my parents that were strong, resilient, and useful, because they couldn't have survived unless they were strong and resilient and productive. And this wasn't something that happened immediately, I have to say, but over years, I came to really incorporate those parts, some faster, some slower, but I really came to incorporate those parts of them that were incredibly valuable.
But what I'm curious about is that when you are hearing these stories, are you going out to read? I mean, this is before the internet. Are you trying to find out more about World War II? Are you trying to read more about the Nazis? Have you ever been to any of these places where your parents were as young people?
Yeah. This is a cause of some ambivalence, right? Because on the one hand, I have incredible curiosity about these subjects, and on the other hand, I have a lot of fear around them. So I went to visit Warsaw, where my mother grew up. I went to visit Lodz, where my father grew up. I've been to at least one of the extermination camps in Lublin, Poland. And I have a very kind of ambivalent relationship with Holocaust literature. I've read a lot of it. Usually there's been some circumstance where I say, okay, now I have no choice. I have to read this. But it's never easy. Movies will come out, like this film came out recently called Zone of Interest.
Oh, yes.
And I have a real reluctance to see it because of the implicit cruelty in the premise, which is living right next door and trying to go on with a normal life.
Yeah.
And And so I find that extremely painful. Will I eventually see it? Yes, probably. But I'll get to the point where I feel like I have no choice, I guess. And I'm not sure exactly what that mechanism is, but it is there. So, yes, I have both the curiosity as well as, you know, a kind of secondhand terror that never really leaves me.
I'm not sure how to phrase this, but people know my story is that I found out late in life, I'm the youngest of three sons. I found out late in life that there was originally an oldest son, James, who only lived for 4 days. He died of spina bifida. Had he lived, there'd be no me, right? And so your parents were very lucky. Had they been like too many people who didn't make it out, there'd be no Irv.
Yeah.
Well, and does that ever enter your mind? Does that ever enter the conversation?
Constantly. Because, you know, on the one hand, yeah, they were the lucky ones. The ordinary story was to die. So yeah, of course. And I live, you know, people like you asked me when I came in and said, how are you? And I said, I'm great. And I am. I walk around feeling like a very lucky person because I am one. And that is part of that feeling of luck.
Do you talk to other children, adult children of Holocaust survivors over the years?
Yeah, sure.
And what has that been like? Are you alone in your feelings?
No, I don't think so. But I think people's reactions are so different. Look, I grew up and I became not religious at all, right? I'm deeply Jewish and deeply not religious. I know that sounds like a contradiction, and perhaps it is. My brother became Orthodox as an adult. My parents were both rather secular. My father grew up in an Orthodox home. My mother grew up in a very secular home, but they weren't really attached to religious ritual or religious thinking. And I can't help feeling that both of those reactions are legitimate reactions to my parents' war experiences. They happen to be very different, but they're legitimate. And so, yeah, I've spoken to other children of my generation of Holocaust survivors, and what never fails to impress me is the differences in experiences, differences because of the way their parents dealt with those experiences with the kids, differences arising from the nature of the experiences of the parents themselves, and differences arising from the character of their children. Always made a deep impression. The only question is, what was the nature of the impression?
Do you have children?
We have one daughter, yeah.
And so do you tell her stories? I mean, are these stories being passed on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've never been shy about keeping that. Not only was there no reason to keep these stories from her, these were part of her heritage. And it was what I had to offer her. And some of them are quite constructive.
And how does she react?
Well, I think she takes those to heart. I don't know that she takes them to heart quite the same way I do, because she's further removed. You know, her parents were not traumatized, didn't suffer from PTSD, so it's just a different.
Yeah, but you're clearly affected.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah,
without a doubt. So, you know, one of the stories that always made a very deep impression on me was the story of how my father got out of the Soviet zone in Berlin. When he took off his uniform and ran, he was stopped by a man with a gun and a soldier. My father looked at him, and my father recognized that his facial features were Uzbeki. And the guards in the prison camp were Uzbekis. And my father looked at him and began to beg for his life in Uzbeki, because he knew a few words, because he had lived in the prison camp. And the man the man pointed the gun the other way, began to cry, and said, "I haven't heard my native language in more than a year. Please go." And to me, what does that story mean? To me, that story means, number one, do what you can. And number two, my father always used that as an example of, you never know what knowledge is going to help you learn. And he impressed this on me, actually. And I've always been a very curious person, always eager to have knowledge. Is that to save my life? Well, no, not necessarily. But it is part of my father's character and part of his legacy that I treasure, that curiosity, always wanting to know, always storing stuff away.
Were your parents bitter? Were they angry about what happened to them? Or did they focus on their good fortune of surviving?
Less so than other. So in Cincinnati, where my family settled in the U.S., there were other survivors, and we knew them. We were a little community. The others were more bitter than my parents were. I'm not sure why. My father had plenty to be bitter about. He was a lucky kid of well-to-do parents, who played soccer and sports and was an artist and couldn't pursue any of that. My mother was a bright kid and was not able to really pursue a higher education because of the war. So they had plenty of cause for bitterness. Their relatives were mostly murdered. So they had the same or as much or more cause for bitterness as anybody. But again, as a matter of character, luck, whatever, they didn't. That's not the part that came through to me.
We're talking with Irv Heppner. He is on this broadcast introducing us to his parents and what they went through during World War II. And how it has affected him and others. We'll come back for a final segment in 2 minutes. You're listening to KVEC. Top of the Hour, ABC News, and then Sam Cotton joins us. We're in a final segment with Irv Heppner, talking about his parents in World War II and surviving the Holocaust and how that carries on into future generations. One of the things I want to make sure we talk about is political engagement, because I would make the argument that if we don't engage, history is bound to repeat itself because good people do nothing.
Yeah, that is certainly true on kind of a large scale level, but I want to talk about it as kind of a personal matter and
sure.
Kind of a personal defense mechanism. One of the things that can happen to you if your parents or you are caught up in a terrible situation is that you can develop feelings of helplessness, and so as much as I think political engagement for me has been a philosophical matter, as a psychological matter, it's also kept at bay feelings of, oh, I can't really do anything. The world just kind of affects me, and I can't really do anything about it. So the act of getting involved in a political campaign, I'm very involved with the NAACP here in San Luis Obispo. I chair the Legal Redress Committee. Taking concrete actions is, for me, a way of feeling better about myself and my role in the world. And so, am I going to keep fascism from taking over our political institutions? Well, perhaps not.
If there are enough of you, we can.
But if there are not, and I completely agree with that. So I think there's kind of a philosophical obligation to do what you can. But even apart from that, there is a psychological benefit to just putting one foot in front of the other and doing the next right thing. And that is something that I've been able to do with the NAACP. That's obviously not a Jewish organization, although Jews have been very active in it from time to time, and there's a long history of Jews being active in that organization. But much as anti-Semitism was kind of a defining feature of European society in the days before, in the years, the eons before World War II, certainly in existence now in Europe. The racial division in the United States is a defining feature of our country, and there are plenty of Jews involved in the Anti-Defamation League and all that stuff, and you know that's fine, that's great, I got no problem with that. Racism is kind of the battle that I've chosen to put my heart and soul into.
And how are you feeling in 2024 about that battle? Are we winning?
It's a very long struggle, and
is it getting better?
It's coming more to the surface, and I think, and that's a good thing. It's hard to say better or worse. The Supreme Court's gutting of the Voting Rights Act isn't helpful. I think the Trump presidency gave permission to a lot of people to verbalize stuff that they would have been embarrassed to verbalize before. That's painful, but not necessarily bad in kind of a macro political way, because it's good to expose what's really there so it can really be dealt with.
Mm. Back in your parents, how did they survive? What kept them going through such formidable odds? Did you ever ask them?
It was obvious. The will to survive is strong in all of us. Some people get lucky, and they get lucky from the point of view of what their character is. When my father was impressed into the Soviet Army, I told you that casualty rates were incredibly high. They were well over 90% in the Polish units. And those were the units that the Russians pushed to the front. That's why casualty rates were that high. My father quickly figured out that, hey, there are ways of avoiding going to the front. What are they? Well, you know, every morning some officer would come around and say, does anybody have this skill? Does anybody have that skill? And my father figured out, well, one day somebody came around and said, who knows how to repair shoes? And my father raised his hand. He knew nothing about repairing shoes, but he knew that he wasn't going to be repairing shoes in a foxhole. He figured it out. Fortunately for him, at some point somebody said, an officer came around and said, does anybody play a musical instrument? And my father played several musical instruments, and so he could honestly raise his hand, and they put him in the regimental band. And the good thing about the regimental band is they rarely send it to the front.
The Russians had a regimental band.
Apparently, yeah. Both as a matter of character and as a matter of experience, my father wasn't afraid to try his hand at making shoes. He wasn't embarrassed if he failed, right? And he was willing to take that risk. That's a matter of character.
As a man born and raised Jewish, do you get upset when you look back on the 1930s and how this country did not want more Jews coming in?
Of course. Of course. I think it was a shameful part of our history. Not the only shameful part of our history, but it certainly was.
Yeah. All right. And what about anti-Semitism today in this country?
Well, again, I think the previous presidency has enabled and made acceptable a lot of speech that folks would have kept to themselves. So I think we are seeing a resurgence of anti-Semitism. But anti-Semitism, this country has never been free of anti-Semitism since there were Jews in the country. That's just a history that we have to live
with. It's a big question, and it may be a naive question. I only have 2 minutes left. But what is behind the hatred of Jews? What is it about Jewish people? I've never been able to understand this. I've been around Jews my entire life. Mm. Some I love, some I don't like, but it has nothing to do with their faith. Mm. What is it that the Nazis and blank were all afraid of?
That is a big question. It's a very hard question to answer. I think.
Do you find yourself asking yourself that? Why us? What did we do to you?
Actually, no, I don't. Because another thing, I guess another thing that I learned through my parents' experiences is that bad things happen. They frequently happen for no reason. On a kind of cosmic level, right? Species extinction level, and also on the level of why do people choose to single you out and hate you? I just don't think those questions have particularly good answers, other than the common ones. Everybody loves to have somebody to blame for bad circumstances.
Isn't that our history? There's got to be a group of people that we can blame.
It's not just our history.
Yeah, just boom.
Yeah, it's not just our history.
Irv, I wish we could keep going, but I'm so appreciative of you coming in and talking about your parents and your family. I've got 45 seconds for a final thought. What's our takeaway here?
I think that lots of people have bad situations that they have inherited, that they didn't do anything to cause, and that's just an incredibly common experience in one way or another. They may not all be as dramatic as being subjected to the refugee experience and being subjected to threatened extermination. But nevertheless, bad circumstances. And the question is, can we be thoughtful enough and constructive enough to deal with them in ways that are helpful?
Thank you, sir. This conversation has been most helpful. Appreciate it very much. Off we go. News, traffic, weather. 5 o'clock hour starts now.
The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111911.